Well, this is...
Where exactly is the Lancaster Boulevard? Chuck E. Cheese.
As soon as I get started, I'm going to have to leave. So.
Okay.
Well, you know the guy who...
Whatever.
They're going to come and get me.
Owns Whenever it. You leave out.
Right. Discount.
Well, he owns one in Portland, too. It's
on now. Okay. Oh, yeah.
Probably not too far.
I don't hit this.
Yeah, right there, like 92nd of Powell, whatever it is.
I'd like to bring the House Committee on Consumer Protection to order. Wednesday, March 11th, 2009. Committee, we have three bills concerning insurance, health insurance specifically, and concerning the rates that are set. Our first two bills I'm going to hear at the same time, because I know this committee likes to multitask. More. So it will be 2432 and 2433. These are bills from come to us from the agency, the Department of Consumer and Business Services, I believe. I guess one that technically comes from the Consumer Protection Committee. I stand corrected. They both do. So we're going to start off with that, and we'll go through. I'm going to have to step out at some point, and I'll turn over the hearing to Vice Chair Riley at that point, and we'll be back shortly. So with that, I'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2432 and House Bill open a public hearing on House Bill 2433. Victoria, would you give us a brief preview of the two bills up first?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2432 provides for public comment period and public hearings on specified premium rate filings for health insurance. House Bill 2433 establishes factors that the director of the Department of Consumer and Business Services may consider when reviewing premium rates for specified health insurance plans, requires health insurers to include statement of administrative expense in rate filings, and director to approve any increase. It will be effective April 1st, 2010.
Thank you. First up, we have Teresa Miller from the Insurance Division at Department of Consumer and Business Services. Good afternoon and welcome. I'm glad you're here to explain this bill to us.
These bills?
Or these bills, yes, both 2432 and 2433.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Teresa Miller. I am the Acting Administrator of the Insurance Division at the Department of Consumer and Business Services, and I'm pleased to be here today to talk to you about House Bills 2432 and 2433, which the department did request the committee introduce sort of on our behalf. These didn't quite make it in time for them to be department bills, so we appreciate your assistance that way. House Bill 2432 would substantially increase the transparency of the department's health insurance rate review process and significantly enhance the public's ability to participate in our process. And House Bill 2433 would strengthen our rate review standards and also require insurers to separately report and justify increases in administrative expenses as part of each rate filing. The Insurance Division of the Department of Consumer and Business Services must review rates for individual, small group, and portability coverage before those rates can take effect. In 2007, the legislature took the first step toward providing greater public involvement in the rate review process by passing House Bill 3103. And many of you who are on this committee may remember that bill. That bill essentially made rate filing documents public immediately upon the department's receiving those documents. But under current law, the public can now review these documents, but they don't have any way to comment on those documents or provide the department feedback or any way for the department then to consider that input. Consumers can request a formal adjudicative hearing, but only after the department takes action on a rate request, and that is what House Bill 2432 is aimed at. House Bill 2432 is really about giving consumers a voice in our rate review process, and it's about allowing consumers and consumer advocates an opportunity to be heard before a decision is made. And I would argue that the bill accomplishes these things without untimely delays, which I know is a concern on the part of some in this room, and without sacrificing a consumer's ultimate legal rights. Before I go into the specifics of each of these bills, I just want to back up and give you a little bit of a sense of our approach to these issues. When we were developing these proposals, we had several objectives in mind. First of all, we wanted to strengthen our rate review standards. Secondly, we wanted to increase the transparency of our rate review process. We also wanted to provide an opportunity for the public to participate in our process. But we wanted to make these changes to our process while maintaining a competitive marketplace in Oregon, which for us meant avoiding requirements or changes in our process that might be so onerous as to discourage insurers from doing business here. We're actually very fortunate in Oregon to have a very competitive health insurance market, which allows Oregonians who want to buy insurance choices, and also provides or creates incentives for insurers to keep prices low, and competition helps with that. So now I just want to go through some of the specifics of these bills. House Bill 2432 requires the department to open up a 30-day public comment period prior to making a decision on a health insurance rate filing. Additionally, the bill provides the opportunity for a public hearing in certain circumstances. The department could decide to open a public hearing based on concerns that we have about the potential impact of the filing on consumers, or based on concerns raised during the 30-day public comment period that I referenced earlier. Additionally, we would hold a hearing in cases where the department receives comments addressing the rate filing standards from 10 affected policyholders, or from an association representing 10 affected policyholders, or if the insurer that submitted the rate filing requested a hearing. Not only does House Bill 2432 significantly expand the public's ability to provide input on proposed health insurance rate changes, but I would argue it does so while also at the same time preserving an individual's right to have the department's decision reviewed by an administrative law judge as part of an administrative proceeding. The second bill, House Bill 2433, would strengthen the existing process for regulating health insurance rates and require insurers to justify increases in administrative expenses above a specified rate. Existing statutes require the department to determine whether health insurance benefits provided under a health insurance policy are reasonable in relation to the premiums charged by the insurer, a standard that would seem to focus on the specific type of insurance, for example, small group insurance, to determine whether a rate filing should be approved. Under this current standard, the department focuses on the insurer's line of business involved in a particular rate filing, rather than more broadly on the insurer's entire business. In 2007, the department proposed legislation that would have strengthened the health insurance rate review standards, allowing the department greater consideration of an insurer's overall business when evaluating rate filings. But I think 2 years ago, there was significantly less interest in our rate review process, and that bill didn't make it through the process. But I think 2 years later, we've got still skyrocketing health care costs, and we've got double-digit increases in rates. And so I think there's significantly more interest in our rate review process this session, and I would argue it's an issue that's an important issue to address. So we're hoping that the legislature will do so this session. While generally each line of an insurer's business should be self-sustaining, the department's rate review standard should clearly allow for consideration of an insurer's overall business. House Bill 2433 would require the department to ensure that proposed rates are reasonable and not excessive, inadequate, or unfairly discriminatory. To assist in making this determination, House Bill 2433 sets out key factors that are routinely considered as part of our rate review process. Some of these factors include things like medical loss ratios, which is essentially the percent of premiums spent on medical claims. Medical trend, which is basically the rate of increase in claims costs consisting of medical inflation and utilization. Administrative costs, and variation in proposed rates over the population affected. Additionally, and I would argue most importantly, House Bill 2433 explicitly authorizes the department to consider factors such as investment income, insurer profits, and surplus levels when reviewing a rate filing. Finally, House Bill 2433 requires insurers to separately report and justify increases in administrative expenses as part of each rate filing. Under the current rate filing process, insurers report administrative costs as a percent of total premium. The department approves a single rate change that arguably allows an insurer's administrative expenses to grow at the same rate as medical costs. But I think most people acknowledge that the cost drivers associated with an insurer's administrative expenses should be more aligned with the general rate of inflation than they are with medical inflation. So I think it makes sense to separate out administrative costs from the rest of the filing, review them separately, and apply a different standard to increases in those expenses. House Bill 2433 provides that increases in administrative expenses above the general rate of inflation will be denied absent sufficient justification by the insurer that such increases are necessary and appropriate. I would argue this would not only provide additional transparency around the components contained within an insurer's administrative expenses, but it would also provide for appropriate additional scrutiny of increases in these expenses. House Bills 2432 and 2433 are really the department's proposals to try to strengthen our rate review standards, increase the transparency around our process, and provide an opportunity for the public to participate in our process. I understand there are others in the room that have other ideas around changes in our process, and so we will stand ready to assist the committee as you guys may determine you want to move forward on these issues. But with that, I appreciate the opportunity to be here today, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Questions from the committee. Representative Krieger.
I don't know if it's really a question, but everybody here has watched health care costs escalate, and of course, to accommodate it, insurance goes up.
Mm-hmm.
So what has this state done, or what has your agency done to identify that what's causing those health care costs to go up, and what are you doing about it? The next part is that the health care costs are directly related to insurance payout costs, and you kind of covered that. And simply looking at something doesn't slow it down. You can do all the reviews and public hearings you want. I would suggest you could start with tort reform in the medical fields, because the bottom policies are about $52,000 a year for these doctors for malpractice. That's $1,000 a week, $200 a day, or $25 an hour on the very lowest policy that they got to charge just for the people coming through the door.
Mr. Chair, Representative Krieger, I think to answer the question that you posed, your colleagues on the House Health Care Committee have been looking at, and frankly the Senate Health Care Committee has also been looking at proposals that the Oregon Health Fund Board has put forward. I think all of you are probably familiar with the work of that board. They spent the interim really looking at these issues, and I think getting at the very issues that you addressed, and we have been participating in those efforts, and we've been working with Representative Greenlick and others on that committee, because I think you're absolutely right. The issue is, and the cost drivers around health insurance increases are the increases in health care costs, and that's exactly right.
Mr. Weiner.
Thank you, Chair. Teresa, just a quick question. Line 4, the director shall approve or disapprove or modify a rate filing for health insurance submitted under ORS. It's 743.018. If they disapprove that, and the insurance company finds that they're not able to sustain or make money off of that policy, what's to stop them from just canceling the policy altogether and leaving a lot of people without insurance? I'm just reading this the way it's written right now.
Mr. Chair, Representative Widener, I think one of the issues is if we disapprove a rate filing, one of the options for the carrier is to request a hearing on that disapproval. So specifically with regard to a situation where we would disapprove, that's the first thing they could do. I think to get to your larger point about what's to keep carriers in the market, I think as we were putting forward these proposals and developing them, as I mentioned earlier, I mean, one of the things we were thinking about is how do we develop proposals that will strengthen our process, increase the transparency of our process, and involve the public, but how do we do it in a way that makes sure that we're not going to lose carriers in the market? Because having a competitive marketplace is something that's very good for consumers, and that's important to us. So I don't think that we have anything in these proposals that will cause insurers to leave the market. And if I'm wrong about that, then that would concern me.
We will hear about it.
Yes, I think you will.
Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if I understand you correctly, this would make the process transparent. It would not forbid the insurance companies from raising their rates. It would make transparent the reasons that they have the desire to raise their rates. Am I correct in that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Tomei, absolutely.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Gill?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. More transparent, maybe, but I don't know if I buy it would suddenly make it transparent. So here's my question. We passed something about this last session, so I'd like to say, for the benefit of those that are on the committee now, but for my benefit too, would you just step back for a second and say something about what's the current process that we're trying to improve? Can you just give us a thumbnail of what's going on now?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gilliam, yeah, to just take a step back, what you guys passed in 2007 was legislation that makes the rate filing information public immediately upon us receiving it. So carriers now file a request for a rate change with us. We make those documents public on our website. The issue and the reason we brought these proposals forward is we saw sort of a gap where you have all this information that's made public immediately upon us receiving it, but then there's no way for the public to really interact with the department in any formal way, at least, until we've made a decision on the filing. And then at that point, they can challenge the filing. But from our perspective, we sort of looked at that and said, why don't we have an opportunity for the public to weigh in before we make our decision, since we make all this information public? So I think you guys did take the first step a couple of years ago in making our process more transparent, but I think we can do more to kind of complete that transparency, if that makes sense. Did I answer your question?
Yeah, I have a follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Follow-up.
That addresses the transparency part, and I sort of started my question on that note, but I was talking about the whole process of rate review.
Of what happens now?
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gilliam, I'm going to point you to, and we can talk through this, but I know you guys are on a healthcare committee, and I know this is a healthcare issue, so I thought I would bring you our Health Insurance in Oregon report, which is something we've delivered to the healthcare committee and others. And I'm going to point you to a section that actually talks a lot about this process, and I think it does a good job. We spent a lot of time on this so that it would adequately explain it, but page 10 really does talk through our rate regulation process. And what it talks about is that the state does have to approve rates in the individual, small group, and portability markets. And it talks about the fact that we receive these rate filings. It talks about the standard that we use that I talked about, the reasonableness standard, and that the premiums need to be reasonable in relation to the benefits provided. And then it talks about the fact that our department actuaries, they use that law, and they basically answer two questions when they're reviewing the filing. They first answer the question of whether the aggregate rate request is justified. And secondly, and some would argue more importantly, they answer the question, is the request fairly allocated among the ratepayers? And they look at things like projected loss ratios. They look at historical and projected trend. They look at administrative costs, net income targets. They look at all of these things to decide whether or not, based on everything they've seen, they think the rate request fits the standard and is justified. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, that's helpful. I don't want to dominate this. If you'll allow me one more.
One more.
Mm-hmm. This booklet makes me think about another subject that I wanted to...
Good. Please.
I don't know if there's anything wrong with this, but one of my concerns about health care, I served with Representative Tomei on Human Services last time, is that we have so many, probably rightfully so, healthcare issues in so many committees.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you start adding up things that may or may not cost more, it's real money. But we don't have a macro view of what those are. Does this, in your view, fit into a larger healthcare reform package, or is this a totally separate track that you and your division are?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gillian, that's actually, it's a good question, particularly given some of the conversations we're having in other committees. And I think it could go both ways. In the House Healthcare Committee today, they're having, not today, but today in the bigger picture, they're having conversations about our rate review process and asking questions about whether or not the rate review process belongs in the insurance division at the Department of Consumer and Business Services, or whether it might make more sense to, if we create an entity like the Oregon Health Authority, whether it might make sense to put our process in the Oregon Health Authority. I think while those conversations are going on, I don't know where they're going to land on that. From our perspective, what we've said in those committees is, who does the rate review, from our perspective, is not as important as what the standards are. And I don't know how long it might take to transition if there was a transition where our process was moved. But I think from our perspective, stronger standards are essential now. So regardless of where those other conversations go, I think it makes sense to consider these. So they could be considered in a separate context, but I would also argue, I think that committee is dealing with some really big issues right now. And from my perspective, these are really important issues that I think sometimes take a back burner to some of the even more important issues in that committee. And not that you guys don't also deal with really important issues, but it might make sense to have this committee look at these as well. But I think it's a good question.
Representative Winger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Teresa, in 2432, on line 18, you set the standard at 10 persons. Can you give me an explanation as to how you arrived at that threshold for when you would have this process?
Mr. Chair, Representative Wingard, actually, yes. My understanding is that was based on administrative rules around rulemaking processes, and when we enter into administrative rulemaking, there's the same standard there, where if we have a request from 10 individuals, we would have a hearing around a particular rule change. So we sort of borrowed it from our rulemaking statutes.
Follow up, Mr. Chair,
please.
On House Bill 2433, I think we're talking about a significant increase in the regulation or the regulatory oversight of this industry, in this case health insurance. And I'm trying to figure out how our doing that really connects to the concern that I'm hearing about, and I think that we all share, about how prices are increasing. In your own booklet, I see it's written here on page 11 that among your recommendations, you say, while this could provide limited relief to consumers from rising insurance premiums, it is important to remember that insurer profits and investment income are relatively low today and are not primary factors driving increases in health insurance rates.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that we tend to regulate more for safety reasons or standard reasons. The only time that I sense we have, as a government, are keen on regulating prices is when there's a monopoly situation, like a public utility providing electricity or water, and everybody's using it, and therefore, if there's going to be a, since they're granted a monopoly of territory, we want to have some process over deciding how those prices are set. But I am just not, I guess I'm not getting to the connection for why we would have a state agency overseeing and granting or not granting price increases. Essentially, this is it's a form of price control, and I'm not sure that we get a positive outcome by doing that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wingard, so I don't know if you're proposing that we deregulate health insurance and not regulate it, but you know, as I mentioned before, I think we do have a competitive marketplace here in Oregon. I think we're lucky because we have that, but at the same time, we have protections for consumers, and we have strong regulation. One of the things, as I mentioned here, one of the things that we do as part of our rate review process, because I think competition is helpful in controlling the aggregate rates. But I think one of the things that competition is less effective at is ensuring the fair treatment of individuals and groups. And that is a big part of what we do when we regulate rates, is to make sure that, and I'll give you an example, because the aggregate rate may mask what's going on with individuals. So, for example, you could have a proposed 3% aggregate rate increase in a particular market. But that may mean for some of those individuals, they could be getting a 20% increase. Others may get a 10% decrease. So part of what we do is we look at that impact on those individuals and try to mitigate that. So, again, I think we were able to do that in a way that still allows that competition to exist but can protect consumers, and I think we're lucky that we have that balance in Oregon.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
And agreed, but my sense is that's what you're already currently doing, is trying to get at that issue of aggregate. But what I see in the bill now is that you want to begin to examine where profits are and administrative costs and begin to either approve or reject. I mean, this is essentially akin to the PUC. I mean, the PUC does this kind of level looking and sets an like, for instance, with PG, I just happen to be familiar with that, they allow them a 9% profit. And again, I think that there tends to be a rational argument for that when you're dealing with a regulated monopoly. But I'm real hesitant to grant the authority to a state agency to come into a market like this and to begin to look at companies' profit and their administrative costs and tell them what's acceptable and not acceptable. And I'm also kind of at a loss to understand how we really are getting at what's driving healthcare costs up by getting in and micromanaging private companies at this level.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wingert, I just want to be clear. I would actually say that there's a difference between what we're doing here and what the PUC does. We are not saying that we're going to only allow a certain amount of profit or that the administrative expenses piece, I'll give you that part. But the profits, we're not dictating through this legislation an outcome. We're not saying profits are going to be capped at X percent. All we're saying with this bill is we want to be able to consider that when we're reviewing rates. That's all we're saying. It's just part of the picture. And I think there are different philosophies of reviewing rates. I think there are some who would argue that when you're looking at a particular rate filing, you should only look at that line of business. You shouldn't look at anything else. This bill says, you know what, instead of just looking at that line of business, we think it makes sense to take a broader look. Again, it doesn't dictate an outcome. It just says as part of that process, we want to look at that. So I would make a distinction between our process and what we're trying to do here and what the PUC does.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Kellen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm struggling through all of this, as I usually do in this committee. It's not particularly unusual, but particularly on the rate structure basis, 2433. There's been a lot of talk about the cost of providing health care. Help me understand whether I'm understanding this correctly. Currently, basically all you can do when you look at your rate reviews is compare the relationship between the benefits and the premiums charged, i.e. if health care costs are going up, then obviously increased benefits are reasonable. And what I think you're asking for in this bill is that there are some factors in doing business that you're not able to consider at this point in time around whether it's reasonable to the consumers as well, to include some look at investment income and profit levels and administrative costs and surpluses, some of those kinds of things that get set aside in the limitation of your current rate review. Am I close on this?
Mr. Chair, Representative Cowan, yes, you are. That's right. The issue around investment income, insurer profits, and surplus levels are issues where I think it's unclear now in the statute whether or not we could really look at those and use those as part of our process. And so that is exactly what we're looking at.
Follow-up?
Please.
To help you get to the concept of what is reasonable for the consumer to be expected to pay.
Mr. Chair, Representative Cowan, exactly.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
One last question.
Well, actually, now that you bring that up, would you be open to closing this hearing and opening one to kill the auction bill while Representative Holby said no? please? I'd be such a hero. Back to the length of time. I have to tell you, as I read your explanation, I know you were, and I appreciate you trying to counter the arguments that this is going to perhaps drag this out, mm-hmm. but some of the language in your testimony makes me queasy when you say should have no difficulty in making a decision, likely triggered only if. Help me understand or say a little more about how this won't just lengthen the current process that we are currently under.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gilliam, and I know this is one of the biggest concerns of the part on insurers is how this might delay our process. Mm-hmm. Under current law, we have 30 days to make a decision. With notice to the insurer, we can take an extra 30. In House Bill 2432, in cases where the public hearing is triggered, which I don't think would be every case, but in cases where the public hearing is triggered, we give ourselves a potentially another 30 days. That's all we're lengthening the process. That's all we would have. So you could have potentially a 30-day delay in addition to what we have as part of today's process. It wouldn't necessarily mean a 30-day delay, but that's the outside.
Okay. Oh, Mr. Chair,
one quick question. Last one,
I promise. If we didn't have this bill, what could we do together, this body or you guys, to help with public input without a bill? Are there some things we could do to make it more transparent right now?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gilliam, I think absolutely. In fact, on the public input, the 30-day public comment period, we're actually doing that right now for one of our rate filings. So I think there are pieces of that bill we could do without legislation. And as I said before, I'm open to having conversations about this. However you guys may decide you want to move forward, we will absolutely engage in that conversation and figure out how we can do some of this with a bill, without a bill, however you guys want to proceed.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I appreciate your testimony. We have a couple of representatives in the room. Representative Nathanson, did you want to be heard on these bills? Representative Shields, if you both come up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do we have a hearing over Bill 3145 also?
No, we don't.
Okay. I think I'd prefer to hold off until that hearing is
signed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I hope my comments will be taken in the context of the several bills and ideas you will be hearing about, because my comments are generally about the need to improve the process. It's absolutely a top concern of Oregonians, the skyrocketing cost of health care and health care insurance. It's a big cost to individuals. It's a big cost to business in Oregon. It's also a big cost to our school districts, to local governments, and to state government. In 2007, I sponsored a bill that's been referred to in earlier testimony that was to shed light on the increases in health insurance rates, to shed light on the requests as they came in. So I've heard it commented that it opened the door, and indeed it did open the door. And now in the past couple of years, we've seen what it accomplished and what more we could improve about the process to have improved outcomes. I think it's important that we get the right kind of information at the right time to ensure fairness to business and to individuals. The bills that you're hearing about today are about consumer protection. They're also about containing the cost of health care. The new legislation that you're hearing in this and the other bills will improve transparency, clarify the rate review process, and extend rate review protection. Inflation has been averaging just under 3% generally. The cost of medical expenses. The inflation rate for that is a little under 10%, maybe around 9%. So we're seeing general inflation rate a little under 3%, medical inflation at around 9%. So it really makes me wonder what's going on when we see health insurance rate increase requests at 15%, 20%, even more than 25%. I think we need to understand what factors are driving the escalation in insurance rates and see what we can do to help start to slow it down. The Oregon Health Fund Board recognizes this problem. Its report last November states, quote, "Healthcare costs too much, and the costs are escalating far beyond the rate of inflation and people's ability to pay. More and more residents are uninsured or underinsured." And I continue a quote from that report, "Within a few years, unless we change, the premium for a family health insurance policy will equal the average family wage." End quote. The report also calls for reducing in administrative spending by health insurance plans. So my comments today are meant to encourage a continued improvement and expansion of the work we started in 2007 and see what we can do to improve the process, increase transparency, and bring some more ability for whichever department, Department of Consumer and Business Services, or if it's under some other sort of agency, make sure that we enable them to do what they can to help protect consumers and bring down the cost of health care. Thank you.
Questions? Thank you very much, Representative. We appreciate your time. We'll call Mike Becker, John Powell, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is John Powell, representing Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield of Oregon. The testimony that Mr. Becker is going to deliver in a few minutes was written kind of to cover all three bills, although I think the salient points apply to each bill. The two bills that you're having a public hearing on at the current time, we are in conversations with the department about those bills, and we'll continue to do that as we go along in this process. The material that the insurance administrator handed to you is quite instructive, and we would urge the committee to look at it. If you just flip through, it shows you from the eight major carriers in Oregon that are writing health insurance. And on that point, the previous committee insurance administrator testified last session that Oregon probably has the most competitive health insurance market in the United States. And I think that's an accurate statement. But in the book that you have before you on page 19, it will show you a 10-year profitability by insurer so that you get an idea of what you're talking about in terms of profitability. And if you look at page 22 and 23, to give you an idea of the medical loss ratios, in essence, in Oregon, 90 cents of every dollar, premium dollar, of these eight insurers go to pay medical claims. Again, I want to make sure that's clear. 90 cents, roughly, of every dollar that's taken in premium goes out in a payment for a medical claim. At Regents, our administrative expenses are about 8%. So this would give you some parameters, I think, of what we're talking about in the overall picture and what we're trying to get our arms around. Our concern, as Mr. Becker will point out, is that we don't increase the very costs that we're concerned about, in particular administrative costs, which is pretty easy to do. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I would simply turn it over to Mr. Becker for his comments.
Chair Riley, members of the committee, my name is Mike Becker with Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield of Oregon. I'm here today to testify in opposition to House Bill 3145, 2432, and 2433. Health insurance premiums are a direct reflection of medical claim cost, and Regents, like all insurers, sets rates to cover what we predict claims will be in the upcoming year. The actuarial process, the rate-setting process, is a forward-looking process. We are trying to predict, sometimes as far as 18 months in advance, what will be an adequate rate covering that year period when the rate will be in effect. The major cost factors driving that rate are increased costs of medical services, new and advanced medical technologies, prescription medications, chronic disease, and aging. A question was asked by Representative Nathanson. Why is it that when we see the consumer price index generally increasing at 3% and the medical price index increasing at 9%, that health insurance premiums increase at 15, 20, or 25%? What's left out of that equation is the fact of utilization and new technology. Consumer price indexes and medical price indexes don't measure new utilization, increases in utilization, new technology. What they measure are a market basket increase in unit cost year over year for a range of services or items. So that's what the primary change is between what we see in medical insurance premiums and what we see in consumer price indexes. And I would direct the committee's attention to some of the work of Dr. John McConnell, the OHSU economist, who has done considerable work in this area, looking at what those drivers are and what's behind the cost increases in healthcare. Individual and small group our lines of business in Oregon are separate pools. And each year, Regents actuaries analyze these pools to determine the appropriate rate to charge the entire pool within individual and the entire pool within small group. And these rates are based on the age of the individuals in those pools, the medical care utilization of those pools, and the projected future costs of medical care. Rates are not based on the small employer's personal utilization by employer. We do not set rates for that employer based on that employer's utilization. That is not allowed under Oregon law. Same with individuals. We do not set rates based on that individual's utilization. The actual premium rate paid by an individual or small group depends on the benefits selected and the deductibles selected, the individual's age or the group's combined age, and the number of dependents covered by that policy. It's already been noted that we have a number of statutes in this state that have provided additional transparency and scrutiny around the rate filing process, and I'd like to touch on some of those for the individual and small group markets. And we've seen this issue come up for the past three sessions, at least here in Oregon. It was already noted, House Bill 3103 by Representative Nathanson, the rate filing transparency bill that makes the rate filing documents transparent and open to the public, except for those documents that the department determines are protected trade secret information and that their release would harm competition. Secondly, we have health plan financial reporting, and that was Senate Bill 501 in the 2005 session. That is a document that I have handed to the committee. And what this is the Regents 501 report, the most recent one on file with the department. That report is online, and that information is available for the public scrutiny. The third concept has been mentioned by a number of folks today, and that is the Health Insurance in Oregon report that is published annually by the department, gleaning information directly from all of the insurers' financial filings and other sources of information, and that is put in a very user-friendly document. And I can't tell you enough that there is so much great information in there about what is really going on in the insurance market in this state. The financial regulation, form regulation, and consumer protection functions are within the department, and we have rate regulation. And the second document I'd like to draw your attention to is something published by the insurance department. Two pages. These are all of the documentations and analysis that must be completed with each rate filing by a health insurer in the state of Oregon. Regents understands the need for transparency and access to information and a public process for rate filing approval, but there are also countervailing considerations. We must not add additional cost to this system, create additional delay and uncertainty in the rate approval process. We must not exchange an actuarially sound rating model that seeks to accurately determine the adequacy of future premium rates for a political model based on vague rating factors and discretionary standards. We must not usurp the business decisions of health insurer boards of directors and officers on appropriate administrative expenditures. Transparency is appropriate, but it is not appropriate to grant the insurance department authority to apply vague standards, such as we see in House Bill 2433, standards such as what is reasonable, sufficient, or appropriate to determine what administrative costs would be approved. And we must not be lured into the seeming simplicity of limiting health insurance administrative costs to CPI, to the Consumer Price Index. This is an untested measure, not used in any other state, and there is no correlation between the Consumer Price Index and the functions and costs of doing business as a commercial health insurer in this competitive marketplace. And I draw your attention to the bottom of my testimony, where I have from the Bureau of Labor and Statistics a description of what the Consumer Price Index is. And I ask you to think about that in relation to a commercial health insurer. The CPI represents the change in prices of all goods and services purchased for consumption by urban households, such as fees for water and sewer service, and sales and excise taxes paid by the consumer. Those things are also included. Income taxes, investment items are not included. That is the measure by which health insurers will be held for administrative costs. And that standard, again, will be we will have to show that they are appropriate, sufficient, and adequate for the insurance department to approve those costs if they are higher than that consumer price index comes in each year. Finally, we must not squander the most competitive health insurance market in the United States, leaving consumers with higher costs, fewer choices of health plans, and fewer benefit offerings. Make no mistake, and this has been touched on today a couple of times, these bills are not about health care reform. These are untested experiments being layered onto Oregon's highly competitive and highly regulated health insurance market. Nowhere in the country has this degree of rate regulation been applied in a competitive market anywhere near what we see here in Oregon. Let me quote from Teresa Miller, the acting insurance administrator, in an article she wrote for the Statesman Journal on February 26th, referring to these very bills we're talking about today. These changes alone won't solve the problems of availability and affordability of health insurance. However, they will make our rate review process more open to the public and the consumer advocacy groups that are a vital part of creating changes to Oregon's health care system. We look forward to working with the department and the committee to find workable solutions to these issues. Thank you.
Representative Tomei, question?
Yes. May I have a couple of questions?
Certainly.
Thank you. So thank you for your testimony, Mr. Becker. And looking at these two bills, I heard a lot of explanation about how you arrive at the rate increases, et cetera. And all that is very interesting. But I think what some of us on the committee are very interested in is transparency. So when you look at these two bills, can you show me specifically which parts of the bill you would have problems with?
Certainly. Chair Holvey and Representative Tomei. In regard to House Bill 2432, these are our concerns. The uncertainty and the delay and the cost in the rate-setting process will all lead to...
I'm sorry. Say that. Could you point to what part of the bill?
In Section 2, Subsection 4, the department's authority in regard to rate regulation is changed to include approval, disapproval, or modification. And that's a unilateral decision. Whereas currently, if you look in the description of what is in the Health Insurance in Oregon report, you will see a description of the current process that takes place.
Right.
It's a give-and-take process.
Right. Okay.
This will be a unilateral decision.
Got that. Okay.
So by
anything further in that bill?
Yes. The fact that the public hearing process could add an additional 30 days and that uncertainty to the rate filing process. That timeline, that uncertainty creates greater risk and higher insurance premium costs.
Okay.
It creates the potential for delay.
Okay.
That delay is increased when the department, if the department were to unilaterally modify a rate and approve something less than is adequate. And the remedy we heard from Teresa Miller was the health insurer could request a fair hearing under the Administrative Procedure Act. Regents is currently involved in such a fair hearing. It is very timely, very time-consuming. We are about 9 months into that process currently. It is very costly, both for the department and for the insurer. So unilateral approval, disapproval, or modification will lead to those types of delays and costs.
Okay, and that's all in this bill that you are concerned with?
Chair Holvey, Representative Tomei, yes.
Thank you. And how about 2433, if I may, Mr. Chair?
Certainly.
Thank you.
Chair Holvey, Representative Tomei, in regard to House Bill 2433, our concerns are with the new rating factors set forth in Section 5, Section 1, Sub 5.
Okay.
We consider these to be arbitrary and vague and will lead to non-uniform application of these standards across insurers and across products. We add the variable of historical data, again, which has no place in a forward-looking actuarial analysis of what rates should be in the future.
Got it.
We have a question about the qualification of the insurance department staff to assess the adequacy of medical cost controls and medical quality improvement efforts.
And where do you see that in the bill?
That's in Section 1, Sub 5. If you look at the factors that are laid out, A through J, that the department will be looking at, the sub J is demonstrated efforts to implement cost controls and improve efficiency and maintain or improve quality. We also have a concern with sub K in those factors that says the department can spell out any other factor, which is wide open, completely no indication of what those other factors could be established as part of the rate review process. All of those factors and the uncertainty around them will lead to increased costs, market instability, less competition, and fewer consumer choices in health plans and health benefit offerings. The next section I'd like to draw your attention to in this bill is Section 3, the review of administrative costs. Again, what we see in this section are standards that are arbitrary and vague. If you look at what those standards are, you will see such words as reasonable and sufficient. There is no indication of how the department would apply those standards uniformly across health plans and across products. This proposal also, as I've noted, removes from insurers' boards of directors and officers the authority to make business decisions and operate their companies and determine what are appropriate administrative expenditures. As I've noted, we are concerned about CPI reference, limiting administrative costs to a standard that bears no resemblance to what is being done or how a health insurer operates and must operate in this marketplace. We have the same concern, as I previously mentioned, in regard to the department being able to unilaterally modify a rate filing and approve it at some lesser amount, the remedy being that we are forced into a hearing process that can take upwards of 9 months to complete.
Yeah. 9 months? 3 months. 90 days, right?
Chair Holvey, Representative Tomei, there are two different hearing processes at issue here. The public rate public rate comment process is not a formal fair hearing process as proposed in this bill. The second type of hearing is a formal adjudicative hearing in front of an administrative law judge. That is the remedy for a health insurer who has a rate filing that is denied or unilaterally amended by the department to some lesser amount that is inadequate. That's the rate process. That's the administrative process that is extremely time-consuming and costly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I appreciate your comments, and you kind of came full circle and repeated a few of them. But I have one question, and I'm going to move on here because we do have quite a bit of testimony. I mean, you expressed quite a bit of concern over the factors that are listed in House Bill 2433 as being arbitrary and, you know, not workable, I guess. So do you have a list of factors that would be more to the point that you feel that should be considered in determining, in making this, in looking at these premium rates?
Chair Holvey and members of the committee, yes, we have been working with a group of insurers looking at the rating factors spelled out in Washington law and looking at supplementing those with various factors laid out in House Bill 2433, trying to come up with a workable alternative.
Thank you. So you're comfortable with the rating factors that are used in the state of Washington? I'm assuming that's what I'm hearing from you.
Chair Holvey, members of the committee, yes, many insurers in Oregon do operate in Washington as well.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Does the committee have other questions of this particular panel?
Just a quick comment from watching this.
Okay, quick.
It would appear that maybe if the Oregon legislature has been using the standards that are arbitrary and vague, and maybe that's what's wrong with our ways and means process.
Starting what year, Representative Krieger?
About 2001, I think, when I got here.
So I really need to move on.
I have a real question.
I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2432 and 2433 and open a public hearing on House Bill 3145 to accommodate the schedule of Representative Shields, who's here to testify on that particular bill. Representative Shields, did you have anybody else that was testifying with you, or
would you prefer, Mr. Chair, to bring the whole panel and I can dial in Senator Ringo? It doesn't really matter to me.
Yep. Oh, Laura Etherton and Ringo. Let's go ahead and do that first panel, and then we'll get back to the other bills at hand. So, Laura Etherton, and can we dial this thing? Okay, committee, we will stand in recess until we get this phone hooked up. And I'm going to reopen the hearing on House Bill 3145, which we've had no testimony on yet, and Representative Shields and Laura Etherton are sitting here ready to testify, and then we'll get to you.
Okay.
So with that, committee, I'm going to reopen the public hearing on House Bill 3145, and welcome to the committee this afternoon. If you would identify yourself for the record, please.
Thank you, Chair Holvey, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Chip Shields. I represent District 43 in Inner North and Northeast Portland, and I'm pleased to be here as chief co-sponsor of House Bill 3145. In the 2007 session, we did make an advance with House Bill 3103, where we opened up the door and provided some transparency on the insurance rate review process. And through that, I've been able to gain some great insight into how that process has worked through the Regents rate increase that was requested for 2008 of 26%. And through that, the case brought forward by Karen Kirsch, her attorney, former Senator Charlie Ringo, and Larry Kirsch, who's very well versed in health economics, and I would encourage you to pay very close attention to his testimony when he comes forward. Unfortunately, once we got a look inside that room, what we saw is a process full of a whole lot of warts. And I commend the department, DCBS, for coming forward with two bills that will improve this process. House Bill 3145 simply improves that process more. Now, Mr. Becker talked about the rating standards and the other two, but I think as you listen to the story that former Senator Ringo will tell you, as well as Mr. Kirsch, you will find that nothing could be vaguer than the current standards, or lack thereof, when it comes to approving the insurance rates in all lines, well, in this particular case, in the individual lines. And just to summarize what those rate increases were, again, it was 26% in 2008. In 2009, Regents has asked for a 19% increase, all of those on top of a 12% increase in 2007 and a 16% decrease in 2006. And the reason that's important on individual lines, of course, is because I would bet that a large number of those individual policyholders are sole proprietors and corporate officers in small businesses. And what I think this bill is about is improving health care, but we can't simply improve health care by increasing the funding of health care this session if we do nothing to try to contain the costs on all fronts. It simply won't be enough to increase health care funding if we don't try to contain costs. We cannot ignore the insurance rate review process and hope to hold health care costs down. So again, I believe House Bill 3145 will be good for small business, and I would encourage you, there will be some amendments and improvements to the bill, and again, I'd be happy to sit down with the department and industry to try to put together a fair process that will result in lower rates. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Shields. Go ahead and have Laura give your testimony. Is there any questions for Representative Shields? Maybe we'll see if anybody's got a specific question for him. Looks like you're off the hook. If you wish to stay, you're welcome, as long as you want to. I know you have another committee as well.
I do, yes. I should get back to public safety. So thank you very much for hearing this bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for taking the time to be here.
Thank you. My name is Laura Etherton. I'm the representative, Chair Holvey, and members of the committee. I'm the consumer advocate with OSPIRG. We're a nonprofit public interest organization with members across the state, and we've been proud to be standing up for the public interest for about 37 years here in Oregon. I want to take a little bit of a step back and thank you for hearing all three of these bills today. I think this is a very important issue. Oregonians across the state, all of us probably in this room, are facing staggering increases in our health insurance premiums and our out-of-pocket costs. These current economic times that we're living in, with small businesses, large businesses, and consumers struggling to pay the bills only make the need to act on this issue even more clear. We are looking at costs that are rising much higher than the rate of inflation. And the rate of inflation is important when it comes to a family budget, when it comes to the bottom line of a business starting out. What are all the costs you're paying, and which ones can you keep up with, and which ones can't you keep up with? From a review of the small business and individual business rate increases that were filed in 2008, we did an initial look on that and are continuing to work on a more comprehensive study currently. But initially, what we are seeing is consistently double-digit increases, many of which affect the largest numbers of consumers, actually reaching 20% in the individual market and around 16% in the small group market. So these are high numbers. House Bill 3145 takes steps to strengthen the existing rate review process in a couple of ways. It looks at the standards, clarifying that it is important for rate review to look at not only the reasonableness and the sufficiency of a rate, which are very important things as well, make sure that insurers have enough money to pay claims. That is important, as we know. We don't like to see large corporations not able to pay their claims, not being able to. I think we're seeing AIG going through some difficult things. We want to make sure that's sufficient. But at the same time, we want to balance that to make sure that rates aren't so high that ordinary people can't buy the product. That's not going to be good for anybody either. So I think we're wanting to balance that more clearly so that this whole system works and is sustainable for consumers, for businesses, and insurers. In this bill, clarify the rate increase, making sure that rate increases are actually necessary to maintain solvency and retain stability so we can reduce the spikes and valleys that we're seeing in the insurance rate increases, and as well making sure that the insurance companies are doing what they can to help reduce the overall cost of health care. This is an issue that I think this whole building is talking about, and folks outside of this building all around the state are struggling. How do we get the cost of health insurance and the cost of health care down? The reality is that health insurance companies have a very important and potentially very powerful role to play in helping us contain those costs, helping health care itself be less wasteful and more effective at actually keeping people healthier. They have enormous purchasing power, and are they using that to help drive down those costs and improve quality? We would love to see a system that involves more of that. Finally, I want to just call your attention to a couple of pieces included in the testimony. I've included a summary of the amendments that have gone into Legislative Council. As I'm sure a lot of folks know, Legislative Council is working very hard and has a lot of work to do, so we do not, and I apologize that we are not able to have those amendments actually printed for you, but I did want to bring you a memo that summarizes the amendments that working with Representative Shields, our organization has put into Legislative Council, and kind of review the overall pieces that do make some changes to the bill. One of the more significant changes is the bill would no longer expand rate review to the large commercial market, so it would retain rate review in the individual portability and small group markets as it exists now. It would also do some sort of technical fixes and streamlining of the bill in some places. Looking at the bills brought forward by DCBS, there's sometimes just one way to skin a cat works just fine, and so we substitute some of the exact language wherever we could. And then in some other areas, looking at this issue of how should rates be reviewed? What is the proper way for insurance companies, for consumers, for businesses? We're all looking at the same thing. How can we come to a fair process where everyone is heard and we come up with something that doesn't put small business out of business, doesn't put families into bankruptcy, and keeps the insurance system here competitive and ideally more so over time. Whether that is the current process and adding, as the DCBS, and I want to give credit to DCBS for bringing forward good ideas that would move this process forward. We're, of course, want to see how far we can really improve this for folks, but improve the hearings process, whether that is in our bill, consumers and businesses would have a more meaningful role as actual interveners in challenging a rate approval. Given the incredible impact raising health care insurance costs has on families and businesses in this state and its impact on the economy, we think that that is appropriate to protect the public interest in the economy in the state. And then another option to look at, and I think this is an equally clearly valid option, an option that other states have done, is looking at insurers filing a request to raise a rate that itself could be challenged. The insurers making their case, consumers and businesses making the case otherwise, and the insurance division or whoever ends up being in charge of approving rate increases being more the final arbiter and deciding between the two. So I think there's a lot of options, and I would encourage this committee to just look at those options. We are more than happy to provide any information that we can help to dig up on these numbers of options for how to do this well in Oregon as you move forward on that. The final thing I just wanted to highlight is that the good news, I think, is that in Oregon, Oregon's insurance companies are not on the brink of insolvency. While profit levels are narrow, that is quite typical in this industry, and the surplus levels, so the amount that's in savings, are well above the minimum requirements in Oregon. I'd like to draw your attention in that health insurance in Oregon report that you have to page 21 that does show a graph of the surplus levels in Oregon of Oregon's insurers that have put aside quite adequate amounts of money to cover that. So I do, the description of that notes that insurers possess surplus well above the minimum required in Oregon. So I think what we really want to see is a balance between what can we do to make sure that that consumers and businesses also make sure they have a healthy bottom line as well.
Thank you. I'm going to go ahead and go to Mr. Ringo. He's been sitting on the phone. And are you still there?
Yes, I am. Chair Holby, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Welcome to our committee, former senator, and appreciate you taking the time out of your day to testify on this bill. So I'm going to turn it over to you at this point.
All right. Well, thank you very much. First, I was just going to say hi to some of my old friends. I don't know who's sitting in the room, but Representative Tomei and Krieger and Riley, you're all doing well, and everybody else on the committee. I got out of the legislature and moved over to Bend to relax a little more, but in sometime around August of 08, I had a phone call from Larry Kirsch, and also spoke with Karen Kirsch, as to whether, in my capacity as an attorney, I would represent them on a pro bono basis, where I would, without asking for compensation, help them on their case. And I looked into it, and I decided that I would do that. And essentially, Karen Kirsch, as far as I know, has been the only person in Oregon ever to challenge the insurance division's approval of a rate increase. It's never been done before, and I think it's kind of caught everybody off guard as to how this has unfolded. In the course of this contested case proceeding, we received a whole stack of documents, and for me it was a real eye-opener because they revealed how the insurance division actually conducted its business. And then in February of this year, we had a two-day hearing in Tualatin at the Office of Administrative Hearings where we took testimony and got a lot more detail about that process. And that's just what I want to talk about today. And I put together a very small packet that contained just a couple of those documents. And Chair Holvia, do you know, has that been passed out. At the top, it says summary of events in Regents' late filing. Has that been passed out? Or?
Yes.
I am instructed that it has been.
Yes.
Okay, good. Thank you. Well, you know, the summary is just a very brief outline as to what occurred, but essentially, Regents requested this rate increase that on a quarterly basis, it was a 10.3% increase, and annualized, it's a 26%. So they made that increase, they made that request on February 29, 08. On March 3rd, the actuary, Scott Fitzgerald, came back and he said the division strongly feels that only a 2% rate increase can be justified. Okay. And as you look on about the third page, there's a copy of his document where he says that. And the way this unfolded is that originally the division said, no, we strongly feel that only a 2% increase can be justified. Then a couple weeks later, there was a little back and forth and some negotiation, and they said, okay, 4%, we'll go along, we'll do 4%. And Regents essentially said, no, we won't accept 4%, we need the whole thing. And they set up this meeting, and I call it a secret meeting because there's no documents of any kind. It took place between the president of Regents, Bart McMullen, and Corey Streisinger, and there's no minutes of this meeting that's been disclosed, but the outcome of that meeting was that Regents got its full rate increase. And I found that process a little bit disturbing. A few days before the decision was made, and you'll see the next item in that packet is an internal email that the subject line says gaming the system. And that's where the actuary was, you know, playing with the numbers to figure out how he could justify the full increase, and he did. You know, he was able to tweak the numbers and say, okay, they want the full increase, and we're supposed to give it. Apparently, I think their marching orders have been given. And so they did grant the full increase. And then the next page in that packet is the reasons for approval, and it's kind of it's just a one-page document, and I think up on the right-hand corner you'll see it says confidential. That document does not contain any confidential information. It was like one figure that was taken out, but it doesn't contain any confidential information. The relevance of that page is that just based on that reasoning, that is the sole reasoning why Oregonians are paying $30 million more per year for health insurance. And in my opinion, when you're talking about that much money, there should be a lot more process involved. There should be some real analysis, not kind of a miscellaneous, well, there's this number and this number. The other thing that's totally missing from that document is any discussion as to the appropriate legal standards. It doesn't discuss what the law required them to look at in terms of making their decision. It's just, okay, yeah, we will end up doing it. The last document in the packet is an email from Corey Streisinger where, and this is after the approval. The approval was April 11th of 08. And so the last page is an email from Corey Streisinger. She was informed that the approval was given. But then she's noting a discrepancy and saying, okay, there was a discrepancy between what happened at the secret meeting and what these other figures presented indicate. And it just shows that even after the meeting, the insurance division is still scrambling to figure out what the real numbers were and to justify the increase. And so the increase did go into effect on July 1st, 08. Now, during this hearing in February, I questioned the actuary, Scott Fitzpatrick, who was the main guy on this. He said that he has done about 200 rate reviews during his time at the insurance division. I said, okay, 200. How many of those have you turned down? How many of those have you... And he said, zero. Absolutely zero. And I said, so every time they ask for a rate increase, you eventually say yes? And he said, yeah, they do. And I just found that astounding because it seems to me that it really means the insurance division doesn't have much credibility in terms of holding the line when it needs to be tied. Another thing that came out at this hearing was that we took a testimony of the guy from Regents, Tom Wortman. And I said, well, what? You tell me what happened at this meeting with Corey Streisinger. What was there? What happened? I mean, there's no notes. What happened? And he said, well, we just told the insurance division that we weren't going to back down. And those were just about his precise words. We weren't going to back off, I think. We weren't going to back off. Meaning that essentially Regents felt that they could go into the division and demand whatever they wanted. And re- really that is what they did, and I think the upshot is that the actuaries had a certain opinion, and then they were overruled by the leadership of the insurance division, or in this case, it would have been Corey Streisinger. And my belief is that when you've got this much money on the table, affecting 99,000 Oregonians, that cannot be the proper way to review a rate request by insurance companies. My looking at these documents indicates, I think these actuaries they have at the insurance division are very professional, and I think they try to do a great job. During the hearing, I sensed a lot of anguish by this actuary that a lot of Oregonians were going to pay a lot more over his recommendation. So I think they do a good job. It's just that the overall process needs a lot of work. The only other thing that I would want to point out is that in that one-page reasons for approval document, where up on the right-hand corner it says confidential, that document should not be confidential. Frankly, it isn't confidential. This whole process that I just described was done completely in the dark. And I think as most of us agree that when you put sunshine on the process, it usually happens a lot better. And the insurance companies like to claim that they've got proprietary information that needs to be kept confidential, and I understand that, and I think there's probably some truth to that at some point, but that doesn't mean that a lot of the process can't be made public. And if it were made public, I think that there would be a lot better input into the process, and I also think the insurance division would be a lot more careful the way it went about its approval rather than the really shoddy way that occurred here. So that's what I've seen in this contested case process, and I really appreciate the committee's efforts in looking into this process. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Ringo, and I just might add that I know that this particular case is, you know, under adjudication and probably, well, assuredly can't be commented on by the agency, and so I'd like to try to keep the conversation around the bill and the process as you described. And I guess part of it is, from your perspective, do you think that the insurance division receives enough information from the insurance companies to, look at all the actuarial information and make a determination that the rates are too large or too small or not enough?
Well, I think the insurance division receives all the information they need. In this case, when I asked for the appropriate documents, the initial production I received was 703 pages. And a lot of it was very detailed financial tables, just tables and tables of numbers. And also in this rate review process, there were several meetings where and email exchanges between Regents and the insurance division where the actuaries at the insurance division were seeking more information and Regents provided that information. So I think that there's plenty of information available. I think the actuaries did a good job asking for more when they thought that they needed it.
That's helpful. So I guess the other piece is you know the insurance industry. You probably didn't hear them testifying on a previous bill, but of course they have a concern, and I think it's a legitimate concern about the time it takes to get a rate approval. And so through this whole process, you know, we have two bills that the agency has brought forward, 2433 and 2432, through the committee. That look at public input into the process before the rates are set, and I believe 3145 kind of takes a backwards look after the rates are set that allows a process for that to be challenged. Is that kind of an accurate description?
Well, I have an understanding as to what those bills are, I guess I'll let people that have looked at them closely comment.
I think that the
time it takes to get an approval, it's a legitimate concern. And this is a tough problem, I think, because insurance is very complicated and there can be lots of tricky things done with numbers. You know, one of the things in this case is that is that Reason says they were losing a lot of money on the individual line. They were making money on other lines, and overall, that they were making a profit. So I think there's lots of complicated factors that need to go into this approval process. In this case, given the amount of money involved, I think it needed a lot more attention than it received. And if that means that a little more time, well, so be it.
All right, thank you. Is there any other questions of Mr. Ringo on the phone?
Good testimony.
Yeah. Representative Wingard.
Senator, right? Senator Ringo.
Former Senator Charlie Ringo, yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Ringo, just a question about the packet you submitted. And I'm wondering if one of the things that might help this process, you know, we live in the technology age, and it seems to me that most of this process between Regents and the insurance division happened electronically in the form of emails and submitted documents.
Right.
You know, I'd be interested in trying to improve the transparency of this by, I mean, you shouldn't have had to make a request to see all these documents. It seems to me that when the process is done, every email that was involved in it internally and between the company and every document that was submitted, assuming that certain things have to be redacted for proprietary reasons, should simply appear on a state website as sort of part of that whole effort, so that anybody, yourself or any other group or consumer or interested person, can review the whole process step by step. And the back and forth and the arguments that were made and all of that.
As I said earlier, I think sunshine is good. I think it cleans up agencies. It cleans up, you know, all types of conduct. In this case, Karen Kirsch made a request for documents on in a letter. She was unrepresented at the time. She made the request on June 30th of 08. And I became involved in August. I didn't receive any documents until October. And many of the documents that I received were stamped confidential. And when I went back to the Assistant Attorney General on this case, and also to the Attorney for Regents, I said, why is this confidential? And they said, oh, okay, yeah, you're right, that's not confidential. And they had a fairly large number of documents that they reclassified just because I pushed them. I said, you can't. And if they hadn't done that, these documents would be confidential. For example, that one that says gaining the system, they stamped that confidential until I pushed them and I said, "Why? You know, okay, you don't want to embarrass yourself. What in that email contains confidential information?" So I completely agree with your point. In my experience, there's a very narrow range of information hands that Regents really considers proprietary, and that's what they call target loss ratios. Target loss ratios are just, no, it's a statistic they use. Well, they could easily DAC the target loss ratios and make every other word on that document available to the public. I think that's what they ought to do. That's kind of what you're suggesting.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And thank you, Senator. I hope that you follow the progress of these bills, and we'll certainly take any suggestions or comments that you wish to offer us on House Bills 2432, 2433, and House Bill 3145. Specifically, though, we're looking at, you know, what is the best rate review process that we can put in that doesn't disable the insurance industry completely. We have to be cognizant of them providing their product in a timely manner, and so that really makes this a difficult balance. But I agree, we need some transparency, and we need to have a fair process to review to make sure these rates are warranted. And so with that, I really appreciate you taking the time and giving us your perspective on this. And as we try to grapple with not this specific case or any specific cases, as we grapple with, you know, the statutes and the overall process and how we establish rates for insurance. So thank you.
Okay, well, you're welcome, and thanks again to the committee.
Bye, Charlie.
Bye-bye.
Do we have any questions for Laura? Don't see any at this time. Thank you. Comments? Did you have a comment, Representative Gilliam?
I had a question.
What, is it a real question?
Well, I guess that's
because we have a lot of people signed up to testify.
Are we just in a public hearing on 3145?
At this point in time, we are.
Then I don't have.
Thank you. Representative
Conflict, Mr. Chair. Is this an appropriate time?
Representative Barton, do you have a comment?
Yeah, I'd like to declare a conflict, please.
If you wish.
Thank you. I feel better. Although I've never represented the Kirsches, they were never my client. However, in June of August of 2008, before Senator Ringo represented them, I did have some conversations regarding the possibility of representing them. As such, although I've never received any payment, I'm probably privy to some privileged information. I want to declare that.
Okay. So noted. Thank you, Laura, for your testimony. Committee, we do have a limited amount of time left. What is today, Wednesday? Oh, we could go over a little bit. I'm sure that would make you all happy. And a lot of testimony left on the table. At this point, I'm considering just going ahead and finishing up 3145 and then coming back. Most of the people signed up for the other two bills are people that are in the building. I think, and I may be wrong, I noticed Craig Anderson. I don't recognize if he's in the room or here much. So, to not complicate things, I'm going to try to get your testimony before we close out the day. So I will be watching that time. Is there anybody else that traveled a distance to be here to testify on any of these bills? Oh. And which bills were you on?
Current one.
Okay. Well, let's go on with 3145 for the moment then. So next up, 3145. We have Christine Chin Ryan, Sean Moriarty, identify yourself for the record, please.
Christine Chen Ryan, Chair Hovey, and committee members. As president of Synergy Consulting, Inc., a local small business since 1988, I am proud to say that we have always provided health insurance for our employees. I also serve as chair of the Oregon Small Business for Responsible Leadership and chair of the Oregon Small Business Healthcare Initiative, and former chair of the now-expired Governor's Small Business Council. The mission of the OSBHI is to mobilize Oregon small businesses to speak with one voice to achieve quality, comprehensive, sustainable health care at a reasonable cost for small businesses in all Oregonians. As a small business owner, I have seen double-digit increases for almost all of the last 8 years. Last year, Regents Blue Shield proposed a 16.5% increase for Oregon small employers. This year, they're proposing a 19% increase on individual policyholders. At this time, I don't know the increase to Oregon small employers. It is known that when one insurance company raises its rates, other companies follow suit with a proportionate amount. Here is my company's medical premiums history since 2001. From 2001 to 2002, 40% increased. I changed my insurance carrier with only 22% increase. 2002 to 2003, 10% increase. Changed my insurance carrier again with a 7.6% increase. 2003 to 2004, 16% increase. 2004 to 2005, 9% increase. 2005 to 2006, 10.5% increase. 2006 to 2007, 15% increase. 2007 to 2008, 13% increase, and 2008 to 2009, 20% increase. We need Oregon's political leadership to take a strong stand now on healthcare cost containment in order for small businesses like mine to continue offering to pay for healthcare, whether fully or partially, for our employees. The majority of small businesses have been saying that they want to offer healthcare but cannot afford the high premiums and the double-digit increases that businesses have experienced over the last 8 years. Oregon small businesses are making critical decisions relating to healthcare benefits for their hardworking employees. The urgency on reducing and containing costs cannot be stressed enough. House Bill 3145 addresses this issue by establishing clear standards to show that rate increases are necessary and not excessive, addressing sustainability by emphasizing cost controls and operational efficiencies, and making the rate review process transparent and open to challenge by those businesses, organizations, and individuals impacted by the increases. Thank you.
Thank you. You'd like to identify yourself and give us your testimony, please.
Thank you, Chairman Hulvey. My name is Sean Moriarty. Thank you, Chair, for listening to me. I'm with Sesco, Inc. out of Portland, Oregon. We are a supplier of construction equipment for industrial and commercial contractors in the greater Portland and Oregon area. We've been a strong, viable small business for the last 30 years. We supported local contractors and government agencies with our experience and professionalism. We currently have 29 employees, and we contribute approximately $1.5 million in wages to the local economy. Right now, we're facing one of the greatest economic downturns in at least a generation. And we've seen other economic downturns. We saw in the 80s where some of the largest, even the largest contractors, struggled just to make it through that time. We saw a consolidation of our industry in the 90s and in 2000 when the dot-com bust happened in Oregon. We took a hit as well. We've weathered through it because the owners and the employees wanted to be a small business here in Oregon. And right now we're facing some of our toughest times ahead. One of the greatest obstacles we have today to maintain sustainability in Oregon is the ability to offer quality health insurance to our employees. We feel that the time is rapidly approaching when businesses like ours will no longer be able to afford health care for our employees. When we can't afford it, who's going to pay it? That's our question. And you know, looking at the options today, those are limited to containing costs and helping out in that process, or we're no longer going to be able to offer it. And we're looking at a process of about 2 years. If same on stays to happen, we're not going to be able to offer our employees health care in about 2 years. The effects in real dollars, we paid approximately $248 a month for each employee in 2003. This year, in 2009, we're paying $476.16. If we project that out in the same cycle time, we're going to be paying $952 a month for the privilege of having health insurance for employees. The effect on the employees themselves has been rather dramatic, especially to those that cover their families. Right now, paying approximately $6.10 for every hour that they work goes towards covering their family on health insurance. If we project that out to 2015, the annual cost for that family will be about $25,000 a year. That's more than 40% of the wages. That's more than the annual wages of 40% of my employees today. And that's just to have the privilege. That doesn't count how much it costs to actually use it. I was looking back at the policy that we had in 2003, and I took a simple injury in which they had to go to an emergency room, get an x-ray done, and have a couple of follow-up visits with their doctor. They pay on that policy about just under $100. Today they pay over $300 in order to utilize their health insurance. One of the things that does set apart, at least in our industry and in our business, the wages, is that it's driven by the performance not only of the individual but of the company. And when we are seeing an increase in our health insurance rates at the rate that we have seen, it makes it, even if we do give them merit raises, they have dependents or other family members on that policy, those raises are evaporated in that increase. Currently, we are making staffing decisions based on our health care costs. We may have to lay off some more employees or make leave vacancies open because we want to have good quality health insurance for our employees. One of the problems that we also have, or one of the other things that we do, is we have many of our employees that have that wear multiple hats and are experts in what they do. When they're absent from work because they can't afford their health insurance, or they can't afford to go into to the doctor, or we aren't able to afford them, that costs us real dollars and real ability to do our job and be a successful company in Oregon. We do see a breaking point coming, and it's coming very soon. Some businesses, including ours, may be forced to choose between offering no health insurance or having a reduced workforce to be able to afford the quality health care. These are hard choices that will have a major impact not only on our company, but a dramatic impact on the general economy of Oregon as a whole. Small businesses want to provide their most valuable resources, their employees, with quality, affordable health care. And Oregon small businesses need to grow and be competitive in the local and global market. So I'm pleased asking you to take a look at these bills and see them as an ability to help us reduce our costs in premiums, help contain the skyrocketing rate increases, and to build a sustainable solution for Oregon businesses and their employees. To help us address the issue of the hidden and not-so-hidden cost shifts that impact small businesses and individuals, and to look for solutions where responsibility is shared, and to ensure that small businesses and individuals have quality, affordable health care options. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate both of you coming to testify and, you know, putting the face of small business on this. I know this is a huge issue for not just Oregon but our whole country, and for individuals as well as small business and big business, you know, to provide health care. And insurance is just one piece of that, and health care costs are, you know, what insurance is aimed at providing you with. So it is a difficult situation we face, and hopefully this legislature will be able to address some of those pieces. You know, if the costs keep going up and we end up with a society that cannot afford health care, I assume that the government will take it over. It's not something I wish for, but it certainly seems to be trending that way unless we can figure this thing out. So I appreciate your testimony today. And I'd like, is there any specific questions of this group? Mm-hmm. Representative Tomei.
Thank you. Thank you both for your testimony. Mr. Moriarty, thank you for the figures. So I see that the health insurance, the basic health insurance is $248 per month. No, $476 a month. So do your employees pay any portion of that, or do you pick up that whole portion?
Our company tries to pay for the individual employee their cost of the premium, but any dependent that they have. When we have an increase, it's usually across the board. So in this case, it was a 40% increase this year. That 40% on the dependent pay is covered 100% by the employee's wages.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Wingard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sean, on the same subject, I just want to understand that you have this $476.16 per month. Your company is paying that entirely, and then if your employee has anybody else they're covering, that comes out of their portion of their wages. Is that how
you
understand?
Yeah, and I think for a full family, it's somewhere around, I don't have the figure off the top of my head, but it's like $1,200 total for everything. So they're paying about $700 a month out of their paycheck.
Great. Thank you very much. Another question, Mr. Chair. Christine, how many employees do you have?
Mr. Chair, Representative Wingard, currently I have, six, seven employees. I've got contractors. In the 1990s, I've had 31 employees.
And do you know about roughly what you're paying per month?
Yes, I'm paying about $500 per month per employees, and I also pay for my employees' dependents or their premiums, so they do not pay 1 cent of premiums. My company's policy after a year, I pay for their premiums, and it is around $1,200.
Okay.
$1,200.
So your cost per employee right now is about $1,200 per month?
Yes, with the family.
So if they're single, it's $500, and if family, about $1,200?
I also do offer dental also, so you add that on top of it.
Well, that's impressive and frightening. Thank you very much for your testimony. I really appreciate you taking the time and out of your day and the effort to come down and give us your perspective. Next up, I'd like to have Felicia Higgins and Larry Kirsch. Alicia, if you'd like to go, you'd like to go ahead and identify yourself for the record, please.
Chair Holding, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Felisa Higgins. I'm the political director for the Service Employees International Union, SEIU Local 49, and I'm here testifying on behalf of SEIU Local 49 and SEIU Local 503 today. Collectively, we represent over 50,000 care providers, public employees, and janitors in the state of Oregon. I'm going to attempt to keep my testimony brief. I know you're pressed for time. The members that we represent sort of straddle both sides of the healthcare problem. They're both providers of healthcare, and so they see the effects of the uninsured coming into the emergency rooms, as well as their consumers of healthcare and have struggled to afford part of their premium costs for their families or for themselves as time has gone on. And I have to say, for several years, we struggled to cover the children of our janitors with health insurance, and I have seen lots of mothers really do everything they could, make choices about food, make choices about mortgages, move around so that they could get cheaper rent, so that they could provide health care coverage
for their
children.
Could you move back from the mic or move it away from you? You're distorting really bad. These are real sensitive mics. Thank you.
How's that?
Better.
Great. Thank you. So we also have 150 employees who work for our union in the state of Oregon, and we pay fully paid family coverage for those employees. So the small businesses that were discussing earlier, their premium rates, we pay those as well, $1,200 for families, $500, $600 for individuals. And these costs are really skyrocketing. And so we're really hoping that this committee will seriously consider House Bill 3145 as healthcare costs are continuing to increase at a rapid pace. We really believe that it creates a transparent system with clear expectations and accountability on the part of the individual insurer so that individuals can understand what exactly the process is when a health insurance company increases its rates.
So they'll have clear expectations and clear standards set around that to know. I think if you ask the general public today, they don't have that understanding. They see their health insurance rates going up, and they're pretty angry about it. I know that you have heard testimony today about increasing medical costs, increasing utilization, new technologies, testing. We really have a broken system, and we're not here today to say that the insurance side of that system is the only broken piece of the healthcare system, but it's a part of the system. And so we should, I think that Representative Krieger's question about changes in the delivery system, I think we should be discussing those, and we are in other committees throughout this building. They're an important piece of it, but so is the insurance side of it. And the last point I'll make is that we really have a responsibility to make things more transparent for the public. I think lots of folks have spoken to that today. We're asking individuals, and I've heard representatives throughout this building ask individuals to take more personal responsibility in their health care costs. But they may not know how much it does cost. They may not be able to shop around. They don't know why their insurance rate went up. And so as we ask people to step up and take more responsibility, we have to have a transparent system to make that happen. And we believe that House Bill 3145 will really help sharpen the tools for DCBS to have some accountability and transparency in their system. The Oregon AFL-CIO was here to testify today. They had to leave. And so just to make a few points on their behalf, they really feel like this issue is affecting everyone. They feel like they've worked on these bills in the past in this cycle and have been asked to wait. And so we really think that now is the time to do something. As we heard from the small businesses, we don't have much time left to do something before more and more employers continue to drop their health care. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. I think that's a good point, or a bad point, I guess. So I appreciate your testimony. I think I'd like to move on to Mr. Kirsch.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Larry Kirsch. I'm a health economist.
Someone has a cell phone or something, BlackBerry. It's probably close to the microphone. Hopefully it's not me. It's on.
Mine was laying there, so I will move it in case it was it. I don't think so, but...
Okay, thank you.
Representative Barton getting up.
Yeah. Highly electric. Thank you. Go ahead and continue. We'll see if it works this time.
Sure. I'm managing partner of healthcare consulting and economic consulting firm called IMR Health Economics in Portland. Our group has been involved to a very significant extent in the issue of insurance rate regulation. We've consulted, or been expert witnesses in six states, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, New Jersey, Kentucky, Michigan, and Vermont. We've represented or been experts on behalf of consumer groups, unions, public agencies, and in many cases, we've also worked for rate regulators, insurance commissioners. So we've been involved and seen a fair amount of what we're talking about today across the country and over a period of the last 15 years. I bring you a little bit of a perspective of being in the trenches of, you've heard the that there's an ongoing proceeding that involves my wife and DCBS and Regents Blue Cross and Blue Shield. As I think Chip Shield said, my wife Karen is the first policyholder that has challenged DCBS's determination. She began with a rate of $389 a month in 2006. That went up to $444 in 2007, $559 in 2008, And if the full amount of the rate increase now being sought by Regents is approved, her rate would go to $665 in 2009. Annualized, that would be a $3,312 increase annually, or 71% increase over three consecutive years. I did a little calculation, which you may find interesting, and that was to look at insurance premiums as a percent of income for people who are at the median income in Oregon. Incomes have been stagnant. Insurance premiums have been going up very significantly. In 2006, somebody at the median income level who had my wife's insurance would have paid 11% of income. In 2009, that would be 19% of income. It's a huge, just contemplate that. It's a huge, huge impact. I want to tie this into the hearing a little bit and that into the bill. I don't want to talk about the hearing per se, but only as it impacts, as it reflects the bill and the concerns about the bill. The hearing was about the issue of whether DCBS made the appropriate statutory determinations. There are three determinations that they were required to make per the statute. One was whether there was any prejudice to policyholders as a result of the rate increase. And prejudice was defined and explained as including issues of affordability and availability of insurance as a result of the sharp increase in insurance. The second one was fairness, and that really had to do with unfair rate discrimination. And then the third one was loss ratio, which has been described as the amount of the premium that goes out in claims expense. So those were the three statutory issues. And the only thing that we really could discuss because of the framework for the rate hearing was whether DCBS made appropriate findings and whether those findings were based on substantial evidence that we garnered through all of the discovery that Charlie Ringo mentioned. The issue was not whether Regents justified the 26% rate increase that it sought. We were not able to go to Regents and get all of the underlying documents and all of the numbers and do all of the trending and all of that. We weren't in a position because of statutory limitations to second guess the determination that the insurance department and DCBS made. All we could do because of the statutory limitations was to say, is there any evidence here that the department made the three statutory findings and determinations that they were required to make? In effect, the process that you've got in the existing statute looks at the decider rather than the insurance company. We're not looking at Regents. We're looking at DCBS and the insurance department. It doesn't permit anybody, like a policyholder, to make an in-depth, complete, and independent review of the justification for the rate increase. 26%, as I think Representative Tomei said, or so I forget who said it, compared with what the underlying cost of medical care has been, is a drastic, just huge increase over what the underlying cost of medical care is. The underlying cost of medical care, the inflation in the medical care component of the CPI, has been running at around 5%, at under 5%. Now, on top of that, you have to say, well, people then been using more CAT scans or more expensive type of services or even more services. But still in all, the amount, the rate, the relationship between the amount that the insurance company is getting in the rate and the amount that the underlying cost of care has been is dramatically different. And it's explained by the fact, in this particular proceeding, explained by the fact that more and more money has gone into the surplus or profit element, and more has gone into sales expenses and administrative expenses. So, for you to be clear, whenever you have testimony that, gee, all we are is a pass-through, it's just the cost of medical care, and that we're just keeping track with the underlying cost of medical care, that's inaccurate. That just is not the case. The issue of procedure and transparency. I'm all for transparency. We were all over trying to make the process as transparent as possible and to take advantage of, for example, House Bill 3103, the rate posting legislation. But as you may or may not know, regions posted the rates and then declared that the meat and potatoes of the rates, the information that you would need to really make an independent evaluation of the rates, they claimed that that was trade secret, and indeed that was, that determination of trade secrecy or claim of trade secrecy was upheld by the insurance division. We weren't even allowed to look at a description of what it was that the claim was made for so that we could have challenged the issue of trade, the claim of trade secrecy. And other insurance companies indeed provided that information in their rate filing and in their posting on the website, therefore raising the question, why is it a trade secret for one insurance company and not for another insurance company? So there were issues related to transparency in just the online posting. DCBS made it impossible for us to depose many of the of their management employees that were involved in the rate hearing. They refused to allow them to testify in the hearing, so that Corey Streisinger, Scott Kipper, the former director, were unavailable and unable to testify, even though they were the ones who were actually the decision makers. There was a whole issue of conflict. Charlie didn't mention this, on a number of issues where there were procedural issues, legal issues that were raised, and where the administrative law judge made a determination during the hearing in our favor. DCBS appealed during the hearing itself, and lo and behold, who did the appeal go to but Teresa Miller, who is a direct report to Corey Streisinger and DCBS. And Teresa overturned the administrative law judge's rulings in our favor. And there, we haven't gotten a determination of a recommended decision yet from the hearing officer, but it is only recommended, and indeed the recommendation will go to Corey Streisinger, who's a party to the case, and she will have the right to overturn the administrative law judge's recommendation. Okay.
Yeah, Mr. Kirsch, I'm hoping that, you know, I know it's hard to distance ourselves from this current case that you're evidently involved in, but I really want to try to keep it to the, and I know the points you're making are to the process, but absolutely, we're specifically trying to speak about the bills before us and how they are needed to, fix the process. Because it's very difficult for us to get in the middle of this case because we can't hear all sides of it.
No, I assure you, Mr. Chairman, that it's not my intent to get you involved in the case itself. It only the issues that I'm raising are structural, and they have to deal, and they go to the issue of how the bills change. We deal with the issues that we encounter.
Okay. If we could move on to the bill now, that would so we can get some more testimony in. That would be great.
Okay. Let me give you six criteria, with six major points that I look for in terms of a viable, decent rate review process. And these come from experience and knowledge of the statutes in other states. And let me give you what they are, and then we can reflect on how, whether or not they are present in the 3145. One is a prospective contested case hearing. That is that the hearing take place before the rate is awarded and the consumer is asked or the policyholder is asked to begin payment, as is the case right now. And this would be a hearing that took place before that. The second one is that the burden of proof justifying the rate increase be placed on the insurance company, and that the hearing deal with the rate review process deal with the justification and the projections for the rate that's being requested. Third is that there is a clearly articulated set of criteria for approving or disapproving rates. Fourth is that the insurance department or DCBS has the authority to review, to ask for and review remedial initiatives to deal with issues, for example, of affordability, cost containment, so that there really is something more than just looking at numbers, but there is something that addresses the underlying problem that people have raised before. Fifth is the issue of outside intervention. To make the process really viable, to make it really work, you've got to have outsiders who are knowledgeable in the field, who take part in the process, just as they're in the PUC process. You've got CUB and you've got others who are there who have know that business, and that intervention be funded. And sixth is that the agency act as a neutral fact finder and a neutral decision-making authority rather than as a party to the case as we have it right now. 3145, I would submit, is reasonably good in terms of the first criterion, that is, it sets up a prospective contested case hearing process. It's silent on the issue of burden being put on the insurance company. The hearing process there is still the way we have it right now, which is it's a case that involves did the DCBS do its job and make the statutory findings. It doesn't really go to whether Blue Cross or the other insurance companies prove their case and could justify it. In terms of my third criterion, clearly articulated decision-making criteria, I would say it overdoes it there. It's got a laundry list of criteria. And there's no, you know, how do you know if you meet one and you don't meet another and you meet a third and don't meet a fourth, what have you met it or have you not met it? Insurance department's authority to initiate program initiatives, I would say it's silent on that. One can make an argument perhaps that an aggressive insurance department could use the full extent of its general authority to do that, but there's certainly nothing there that says black and white, you know, you ought to do this. Funded regular intervention, the only provision there is compensation for interveners if they win, rather than compensation on a regular basis, for example, via a filing fee that the insurance company would pay on a percentage of the premium increase being sought, or a certain number of pennies for the dollar, something of that sort. And agency as a fact finder, neutral fact finder and decision maker, no, doesn't provide for that at all. Let me just give you then one last point, and that is I want to just compare one state which has these a process with these criteria and give you some figures and information about that to compare the results versus the results here. And I'm going to give you the case of Rhode Island. In Rhode Island, which has got virtually all of the above, it's got prospective hearing, it's got burden on the insurance company, all the 6 points that I made. In 2007, the rate request for Blue Cross for individual coverage, just as the coverage that we were had in our hearing, was 7.8%. It was the amount that was awarded was 4%. Here, the award that year was 14%. In 2008, the amount that was requested was 12.7%. 8.7% was awarded. 26% here was requested and awarded, subject to the hearing. 2009, 6.5% was requested, 0% was given, was awarded. I suggest to you that the process there both has had an impact in terms of the amount of inflation from year to year compared with us. We're somewhere like Rhode Island has given about a third of what Oregon has given for those, for that time period. I believe that that is directly attributed to the strong rate review authority that they've got. So, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm here in partial support, I guess, for 3145, but I think that there are really areas where it needs to be strengthened, really needs to be extended, and in particular in the areas, the criteria that I've indicated to you. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. I appreciate you offering us this testimony and your thoughts. Clearly, you've got a lot of knowledge on this subject matter.
Mr. Chair, do we have a handout from you?
Do we have testimony from you?
I'm sorry, I don't have anything prepared.
No, we don't.
Be nice if you could get something written up. I think I'd like to see it, if you could.
Be happy to do
on
that.
Those criteria,
yeah, that's
especially.
Very important.
Yeah. I think I jotted it down pretty well, but it may not be quite as clear as his. But I really want to get a little bit more testimony in on this committee. I'm sure that we might be able to have this discussion again. So I think you laid out a pretty good, clear, concise testimony. So I really appreciate you coming forward today. Thank you.
You're welcome.
At this time, I'd like to call up Christine Shute.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Christine Shute. I'm a Senior Assistant Attorney General with the Oregon Department of Justice. I'm not here testifying to state the Attorney General's position. In fact, as far as I know, he doesn't have a position. But I'm here at the request of the Department of Consumer and Business Services to help explain to the committee just a little bit what the contested case process that you've heard so much about is and what the director's role in that is. In a normal contested case process, the hearing is designed to help the agency build a record from which the agency can make a correct decision on the matter under consideration. So then in a case like this, for example, the purpose of the hearing and all the witnesses and the information that's presented would be so that the insurance commissioner, the director, Ms. Streisinger, could make a correct decision. So she herself would not be a quote-unquote party to the hearing, but rather she'd be represented by someone from our office, and that person would present witnesses and ask questions and make sure the record got developed. And anybody else who was participating in the hearing would do the same thing, develop the witnesses and the record as they saw fit. And in fact, the administrative law judge who presides at the hearing also has a separate and independent obligation to help develop the factual record at the hearing. At the end, the administrative law judge makes a recommended order saying, based on what I heard at the hearing, this is what I think the facts are, this is how I think the law applies, here's my recommendation. And it would be the director herself who would make the final decision on this matter. So it's not, in any real sense of the word, an appeal of a decision that the director has made, but rather an opportunity to further develop the record so that the director can make a correct decision. Whether that correct decision in any given case is the same as or different from where the agency started before the hearing just depends on what happens in the case and how the record is developed.
with that in mind, I took a look at House Bill 3145, and in particular Section 5, which talks about the contested case hearing, sort of sets that all up. And this is sort of a non-standard process that's set up in Section 5. Doesn't mean the legislature couldn't do it, but it's not a standard contested case type process. With respect to Section 5, subsection 3C, for example, the bill proposes that any party could depose any state employee or contractor, including the director herself. And in a normal garden variety contested case process, that would be tantamount to having the decision maker called as a witness, which is a little strange. It's conceptually difficult. It would be the same. You would ultimately be asking the decision maker to testify and then to weigh her own testimony and decide if she was telling the truth or knew what she was talking about or whatever, and probably it would be like calling the judge in the circuit court to say, you know, Judge Lipscomb, what do you think about what you're doing with this case? So it's just a little hard for me to wrap my head around that. As I say, that's not the way things typically work right now. And in fact, since about 1940, or at least 1940, the U.S. Supreme Court and some other federal courts have a line of cases that say that sort of inquiry into the decision-making process of the decision-maker in an administrative proceeding is not proper. Now, that's the U.S. Supreme Court's opinion. Other federal courts say that. Obviously, you folks could decide to go a different direction. And I'm here if anybody has any questions about the contested case process, how that normally works. I'm not going to make any comments whatsoever about the pending matter, however.
Yeah, thank you. I can appreciate that. And I think it was helpful, some of the things you just said. So what I'm hearing you say is this process that we have of the contested case hearing and all that follows administrative law, essentially, that's probably well-vetted in case history back to the Supreme Court, I suppose, in some cases. So, is it true that most of our state agencies operate with some sort of administrative law process in trying to decide, you know, cases or hearings?
Mm-hmm. Yes, Representative Holvey, that's exactly what they do. They have the same process.
So after that point, if one party has still a disagreement with the outcome of that decision, what recourse is there left?
Well, after the contested case proceeding, after the director, after the agency's final decision, in this case made by the director, anyone who has appeared as a party is entitled to appeal to the Oregon Court of Appeals, and the issues there are limited to legal issues and issues that you can get your arms around from the record that was made at the contested case hearing. In other words, there's not an opportunity for new evidence or anything like that at that point.
Thank you. Representative Cowan, a question?
Yes, please. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not familiar with these processes, so that was helpful information. So if the purpose of a contested rate hearing is to develop the material on which the department director will make a decision, then as I look at the Section 5 that you described in 4, line 32, this refers to a party that prevails in a contested hearing. But if I understand you correctly, and I want to make sure that I do, there isn't actually any party that prevails in a contested case hearing as you described it. It's more a matter of gathering the information for the decision-making process.
Representative Holvey and Representative Cowan, I'm kind of speculating here what the drafters are trying to get at. I think that what they have in mind here by a party is a citizen, or a potential insured person, mm-hmm. who pays a rate, who gets the insurance
commissioner to change her original view of the rate increase by reducing that would be entitled to some kind of an attorney fee paid by the insurer. What is a little anomalous there is that it seems to me that if the insurance company was not happy with the rate they got and they asked for a contested case hearing, then and they won, at the end they would be entitled to attorney's fees paid by the insurer too. In other words, a private citizen would get fees paid by the insurance company. The insurance company's right would be limited to getting insurance fees from itself. So it's, I'm assuming by that party there must mean only a private citizen who would be a ratepayer who would appeal. I'm just inferring that based on how that's written.
Thank you. Follow-up?
Follow-up.
And so your understanding then of what this intends is that really refers to the party that prevails in the final decision-making on the rate rather than the contested rate hearing in front of the administrative law judge.
Representative Holvey and Representative Cowan, I think the final decision on the rate would be in the final order after the hearing before the administrative law judge. There would be an initial decision by the insurance commissioner saying, this is what it looks like to me. Then there would be a long hearing process if somebody wanted a hearing, and then the result of that hearing would be the final decision, unless it were appealed. So,
okay. Apparently, I need to be an attorney.
I'm sorry if I'm.
I'm trying to just follow the process.
Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question for you. Everybody's frustrated about health care costs and all of that. And some of this frustration has boiled over. And I just wanted to ask you, it may be a small point, but I just want to get your opinion on this. The voluminous nature of these cases, isn't that par for the course? In other words, people were frustrated that they had to go through hundreds and hundreds of documents. The implication that maybe I inferred when they implied it was that either the agency or the insurance company was trying to, you know, make it more difficult. But isn't this the nature of the beast in a case in a contested case, even at this level?
Representative Holvey and Representative Gilliam, many of them are very, very, very complex and highly document intense and lots of witnesses. So in terms of a rate-making case, I personally have never handled an insurance rate-making matter, so your guess is as good as mine.
And one follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Follow-up.
To what Representative Cowan brought up, as it's written, and I think that the our good colleague Chip Shields has even said I'm open to changes, but as it's written, are you saying that there is no mechanism for the insurance company to receive the same? Is it unequal, in other words, as far as attorney's fees go?
Representative Holby and Representative Gilliam, it's ambiguous on that point.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm not going to make you put your legal opinion on the record anymore. I appreciate you coming forward to give us, you know, sort of an overview of the process a little bit. That was helpful. Thank you.
Thank you.
I wanted to get up. Where the heck was I? Mike Dewey and I guess I'm missing the other sign-up sheet. Oh, here it is. Mike Becker. Or no, Craig Anderson.
Thank you.
Went backwards for a second.
Mr. Chair, on behalf of yes. ODS Health Plans, Mike Dewey, I'm going to be very brief.
We're still on House Bill 3145, okay. For the record.
And just for the record, so you don't have to call us back, we're not excited about any of the bills, for the record. Craig Anderson is an actuary, and I thought it might be useful if you had any questions. You know, I have some comments in just a minute about how rates are set, but let me make just a few observations. One, you heard we have a vibrant market, and it might be the most competitive in the United States. And I say that, and I'm proud to say that when my colleagues and I meet to talk about these bills, the same companies have been in the room for the last 10 years. And that isn't the case with a lot of other industries here in Oregon. So it's nice to be able to have the competition. In some ways, we'd like to see maybe a smaller market, but that isn't the case. Let me say, this is not like the PUC. I mean, if we as we have an actuary that says this market is X in terms of an increase, we are in a competitive market, and we may exit a market at some point in time. And I've lost the chair, but nonetheless, our insureds are free to shop around. And so what I don't understand is, for people that are getting a significant increase, why don't they go somewhere else? That's what our firm would do. We provide health insurance because they can go to A, B, C, and D in the state of Oregon. Part of, I think, what has compounded this issue is, quite frankly, some legislation that passed last session that has been very confusing because there have been winners and losers in the market. And I'm not going to get into that legislation. We talked about it in a significant manner last time around. But nonetheless, folks are free to move around. Now, with regard to just the issues, reform of this entire marketplace is very important, and I think you have to have the discussion about reform of the small market, because that's where we think there needs to be more negotiations for the insurance companies to do some things, and we have some proposals into Representative Greenland, and that's in that room over there. But at this point in time, what I'd like to do is stop, and I would like Mr. Anderson to comment briefly on 3145, recognizing that the proponents have some amendments. We haven't seen those, and so this is a moving ball, if I could say.
Thank you, Mr.
You'll make
Bowie.
Some comments.
But before you go on, you made a reference to a bill we passed, and I'm assuming you're referring to House Bill 2002 from the 2007 legislature.
Yes,
that caused an increase in overall health insurance rates.
Mr. Chair, that bill.
Do you have documentation that can prove that? I mean, I'd like to see it if you do.
Yeah, we can get documentation as to there have been winners and losers with regard to that.
We know there's been winners and losers, and the bill was always designed to do that. But I would like to see its impact on health insurance rates that you're speaking to, that you're alluding to, that this bill caused increases in health insurance rates.
If,
so I'd like to see that documentation.
If I may, Mr. Chair, what I'm alluding to is that there have been some that have had increases, and in terms of what occurred to them, it might be in reference to 2002.
Well, thank you for clarifying that, because anytime you change pools, you're going to have that effect. And the overall impact of changing those pools around, though, if you add all those up, is what I'm getting to. When you add all those changes up, are you saying that it still caused the overall rates and cost to the entire industry and health insurance rates to go up?
Mr. Chair, I'm not saying that.
Okay, thank you. I just wanted to clarify that.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
I'm happy to clarify it. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and the remaining members of the committee. Appreciate having some time this afternoon to testify. I do want to start off by saying that I'm an actuary that works for ODS, and I've been working for ODS for approximately 8 years.
If you could state your name for the record, please.
Oh, I'm sorry. Craig Anderson.
Thank you.
And I've been working with ODS for 8 years, and I've filed dozens of rate filings, small group, individual, and portability with DCBS during that time. I am also on the record to say I'm not in favor of any of these bills. And I really want to focus my comments because of time on particularly the process that we go through, and from the actuary's perspective who works at a carrier, because I don't think that has been really discussed much today. And what I want to say about that process is that having gone through this for they're actually the process in place today is very thorough and rigorous as it stands, and I want to talk about how that goes about briefly. basically, it's been mentioned today that when we rate these different products, they're based on their pools. So what we do is we look at how the pool's experience has gone, and typically that's done over some time period. But we have to file for a future date. So, for example, if we were filing for a July 2009 date, we would look at experience that would typically be between January 2008 and December 2008. So we have to project forward potentially 18 months. And that's kind of the actuarial aspect to that. And there's a lot of calculations that go into that with that projection. One of the concerns with these bills in extending any of the timelines or any of the hearing or the process is that we have to make projections further into the future, which causes a more uncertainty. And potentially, from an actuarial perspective, we would have to build in more margin and potentially would be higher rates as a result of that. To narrow in on the actual process that we go through, when we file the rates, we supply very thorough documentation, and then we go through, it's reviewed by the actuaries at DCBS, and they do a very thorough job there in their area. And there's back and forth between those actuaries and us at the carriers, and we talk about the factors that were used, the reasonableness of those factors, how the rates are determined, what the final rates are. You've heard that already, but I would say that that was, again, a process that hits on a number of the points that are actually pointed out in these bills already. I think I'll leave my comments at that for now.
Any questions? Representative Widener.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Craig, I appreciate you coming in today, because someone who actually works on the actuary tables, I know how complex they are and a little bit what goes into them, even though I've never done it myself. But what I'm curious about, what's probably the biggest driving factor in driving rates up in your tables for health insurance?
That's a good question. That is, I would say it's the technology component to healthcare. Some of the CPI and other trends that were referred to earlier today, the actual cost of component costs, the fees, are not going up that much. For example, doctor salaries are not necessarily going up that quickly, but the technology that's coming online constantly is some of that technology is a positive thing. It can actually save hospital days by having a new drug, but others are more invasive procedures, higher technology imaging, for example. Just recently I heard that there's a genetically developed drug that could be $40,000 a month for a condition, and that's something that's new and on the horizon. And I think as in this country, there is an unlimited demand for improvements in healthcare technology. And I would say that's really the driver that moves things beyond regular CPI.
Follow up.
If we were to do something to help you contain cost, I mean, we're talking transparency, and I think if we're going to do transparency, government should lead the way, and we're not doing that. So, but if we were to look at something to help control costs so they're not climbing so much, what would probably be the biggest thing, the technology factor, whether it be putting limits on different policies or you guys offering different policies where they wouldn't be able to, say, they'd have to go to an old CAT scan versus a new CAT scan to look for things. Would you guys be able to write policies like that where you wouldn't be on the cutting edge to buy the expensive stuff?
Mr. Chair, Representative Widener, I think what I would say is that insurance companies can be creative and add something to the table when it comes to those policies. I think what it is I think Medicare has done this sort of thing, and it's really when new technologies are available, you have to analyze the efficacy of those, whether those are really a cost savings in the long run, not just a convenience or that sort of thing. And I think that health plans do have the ability through their policies as far as what they cover or not, to say, to review emerging technologies and say whether they cover them. Is that getting at your question?
That's kind of what I was getting at, because with that being the highest factor in driving it up, I'm just wondering how we could curb some of that, because that's what this boils down to and why this bill's here, is just because rates are going up. And it's whether or not we address it here or where it needs to be addressed. Maybe it's in the other room, and I don't know if we're really getting at this, because I think this might be more bureaucracy on you guys, which could drive rates up, is kind of what I'm seeing after hearing all the testimony today. And what we really want to accomplish is lowering insurance rates.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, just for a minute. Regarding ODS, one of the things we're looking at is trying to look at reforms in the small market, because that's where you don't have the leverage. You do have leverage in the larger markets in terms of the negotiations and what the what your insurance policy looks like. So we're trying to bring the numbers together to leverage that, so that you can negotiate on imaging, for example. You can negotiate with hospitals. You really can't do that in the small market. So that's something we're trying to do, and we're working with other carriers. There's some antitrust implications we're working through, but we're having that conversation with the other committee. So I just wanted to point that out.
Thank you. And I appreciate Representative Widener bringing that up. I mean, it is a choice at some point. I don't know whether the plan makes that choice, that we will pay for this very, very expensive service, and then that gets spread out to all the premium rates, or you know, the premiums themselves, I guess. Mm-hmm. And so that's a decision that I think does require some scrutiny, if that's the main driver of healthcare costs, and we're seeing them, you know, go up exponentially like that, is whether that benefit is really worth the cost at some point, when you see that pretty soon nobody can afford the costs anymore, and then we're left with the situation we're facing right now. So I appreciate that, but also I wanted to ask you just a brief question about, you know, when you're looking at the cost of the insurance, the premiums themselves, and you know, those premiums cover the particular insurance company that you're looking at, and it's not necessarily just the health costs, but you know, all the whole business model of the insurance company that has to remain solvent in order to continue providing the coverage.
Right.
And so it's not just specifically health insurance costs, the specific doctor's costs, or the cost of that particular high-tech item. You're looking at other sorts of losses that the insurance company may be subject to, that you have to accommodate in your premiums. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, so you're talking about the 10% that was referred to earlier, the non-claims portion of our premium? Yes, we do have to consider that portion of our premium. But I would say, as speaking for ODS, we're in a number of different lines of business beyond the small group, individual, and portability that's filed here.
Mm-hmm.
We provide self-funded services to large employers. We're in the Medicare market. We're actually the administrator for the Oregon Prescription Drug Program. So as a company, we choose which lines of business that we're in, and they have to be self-sustaining. So we're not – that's another concern of ours with House Bill 2433, with looking at with the interest.
Just a second.
Okay.
I'll open the public hearing on House Bill 2433 and 2432. Go ahead.
When you enter when you look at our total business, and there's maybe an arbitrary or someone else is deciding for us how we're allocating the profits or the costs of a particular line across all lines of business, that's something that I think our company, we would prefer to keep that those decisions for our company, because again, we have as a company, we're deciding to be in whatever line of business on whether it's self-sustaining. And to the degree that we're a larger company and can spread some costs, some overhead across all our lines, that's to the benefit of any particular product that we offer.
Yeah, just clarify that for me, though. I mean, I'm not sure I heard you quite correctly. So you're saying that each line of business that your company has is self-sustaining, so that the costs associated with one line of business doesn't affect the costs of another line of business, so that the premiums over here on this side of the business model are not impacted by the profit or loss in the other line of business?
Mr. Chair, yes, that is what I'm saying about how we approach business.
Yeah. Do you know if all insurance companies operate that way?
I can't speak for all insurance companies. I think that part of the review process of our rates already is a reasonable. I do believe they're looking at the administrative rates that we're charging for mm-hmm. a particular line to make sure it's reasonable. How we allocate the costs mm-hmm. To the different lines
right.
is a company decision.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. I'm going to let you off the hook. I wanted to allow Elise Brown and who've been waiting very patiently.
Thank you.
In the back for a moment to say something, and Dave Fiscom. I don't know that anybody else I've seen. Has everybody else testified that's here that wanted to? Have you signed up?
I did.
Oh, really?
Did you ask for Sunday?
Oh. Oh, I'm sorry. Why don't you come up too, please?
Okay.
For some reason, I was looking at your name and it was crossed off. So if you'd introduce yourself for the record, and I've got just a few minutes. I apologize. I imagine you'll get another opportunity to speak.
We're not here every day, Mr. Chair, so...
Okay, I know. Yeah. And I know you traveled a long ways.
Right.
If you'd introduce yourself for the record, please.
Go ahead. I'm Stratha Sangwe. I'm Chief Operating Officer for Pacific Source Health Plans. Thank you, Chair Holvey and the rest of the committee for letting me speak today. I want to first really speak to all these three bills in terms of House Bills 2432, 2433, and 3145, and just what Pacific Source's concerns and perspectives are on them. Pacific Source supports greater transparency and health reform. We want to make sure that the process that we end up with respect to the rates really serves the individuals and the employer groups who are actually purchasing the health insurance and doesn't increase costs. It is important to members and groups that they get adequate notice of rate changes prior to implementation of any rate changes, because there's a lot of decisions to be made given how big a piece of this, big, large and expense this is. We at Pacific Source strive to give our policy holders, whether they're employers or individuals, 45 to 60 days notice prior to a rate change that's effective. Current statutes require us to give at least 30 days notice. Even under the current rate policy, this can be challenging at times under the current rate approval process. And we ran into issues with meeting those deadlines over the past year, partly because the insurance division was understandably very, very busy given the changes with House Bill 202 last year. So time frames were a little bit longer last year. We are concerned, and I'm particularly concerned based on my experience in the East Coast where there were more rate hearing processes, that a rate hearing process could add significant time and uncertainty to the process, which could lead to, first, as Craig Anderson referred to, needing to project much farther out into the future on a rate basis. I'm also an actuary. I don't know if I mentioned that. And that ultimately leads to higher rates, because as an actuary, if you're projecting farther out, you want to have more margin in your rates to represent that uncertainty. We think there's a possibility for increased administrative costs relative to supporting the hearing process and supporting these processes. And it may seem like a small thing, but I had an experience at a former employer on the East Coast where we had some regulated lines and some non-regulated lines. And the actuarial staffing for the non-regulated lines, even though the premium there represented probably about four times what the regulated lines were, was about half the size. And it was primarily because we ended up developing such a large staff to ultimately support the hearing process because it became a somewhat onerous process. So I have some concerns about that personally. But finally, I am really concerned about what it does for individual purchasers and employers who need to make these big decisions if we end up notifying them later of their increases. And so we want to make sure that any process that we do institute has very, very clear timelines so that in the end the policyholder is not the one that ends up either not having time to make a decision or ending up having to make changes sort of off anniversary, which is a lot of what ends up happening right now. We'd like to be part of the solution, and I want to make sure that we offer that Pacific Sources, and me personally, I'm happy to work on any efforts to design a more transparent process. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. You're the first one that's actually said you'd like to be part of the solution, so appreciate that. So, not saying that nobody else does, but I mean, I just wanted to note that. Thank you. If you'd introduce yourself for the record.
Chair Holvey, members of the committee, good evening. Elise Brown with America's Health Insurance Plans, and I can't believe we're saying good evening. First time for session, but I know it won't be the last. So it's a pleasure to be here, and you heard from a couple of AHIPS members through ODS and Regents, and you're going to hear from Providence in a second. The other member that wanted to be here today and couldn't is HealthNet Lisa Trussell, so you'll see her name on the list. But I wanted to speak in behalf of all of them and reiterate again our opposition to all three of the bills, really around the additional regulation means more time and more cost to the process that we already have in place. So again, we're talking about increasing administrative costs, which ultimately add costs to the premium payer. So that's the fact that I want to hit home again. One of the things that I think Dave will touch on here is the good work that's going on in the community right now that this committee needs to hear about. Great information, great collaborative work on getting around the cost of healthcare. So I think I'm going to pass to Dave and let him talk about that.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, I'm here to be part of the solution. Is that what I was supposed to say? Good. Thank you for your indulgence today and for staying into the evening. My name is Dave Fiska. I'm here on behalf of Providence Health System as well as Providence Health Plans. The system does operate a health insurer in this state. I want to make just a few brief comments to you, four main policy points, but I also have submitted to you a record, for the record, a letter from, the Director of Underwriting for Providence, Kerry Walker, and he deals with all three of these bills in some particular ways as he cites sections of the bill that are a concern to us as we raise questions about all these bills. The four points I'd make to you, I'll reiterate a couple, but then some new ones. Insurers are already very heavily regulated in the current marketplace, and you've heard about that. I would submit second that all of our focus, all of us, whether on this side or your side or any side, should be on affordability of health care in these days and age. In this day and this age, we ought to be concerned about adding administrative costs or burdens, both for state government as well as for commercial insurers. What insurers need, my third point, out of a regulatory process with which we finance as well as participate in, is timeliness and certainty, not the lengthy process which are tough for anybody to endure as they go into the months with unadjusted rates and question marks about whether you can continue offering certain products with the length of time that may be involved. The fourth point I wanted to make is that insurers are working on their own initiatives along with business and hospitals and others, and I would refer you to the second handout I have given you, the summary, three-page summary of the Health Leadership Task Force work, which is underway, and I would encourage you at your leisure to read all of that. This is work that was commissioned by involved Providence, Legacy, OHSU, Regents, ODS, and Kaiser at the behest of especially the Oregon Business Council, and has involved a wider group of physicians, health plans, hospital and health systems were asked by the business groups to figure out how to try their own initiative to bend the cost curve. We are working now on the 4 points you see on page one, new reimbursement and payment options, evidence-based best practices, value-based benefits, and administrative simplification. Many of those initiatives can be undertaken on our own without legislative approval necessarily, but would be pleased to provide at a better moment than this a more detailed report on that, and I would encourage you to read the 3 pages, and it deals with one other point I want to make to you, which is the cost shift. One of the things I would tell you, and this is something that is actually within your power as legislators, if you want to do one thing to bend the cost curve in the right direction, you could fund the obligations you create under Medicaid adequately. If you hearken back to the days when John Kitzhaber developed with a lot of us around the table that were called in those days the Friends of Senate Bill 27, one of the principles of the early Oregon Health Plan, now almost 15 years old, was full cost reimbursement for providers. We have let that go in some regards. Today, and you may know, I represent hospitals as well, hospitals are paid 65 cents of their cost, not their charges, their costs for serving Medicaid clients who come in the door in the ER is always open under federal law, as it should be. If you can deal with that issue, and in a down economy with a stretched general fund, it's probably impossible, as well as with priorities in this building, which tend to be on K-12, higher education, cops and prisons, as well as maybe then eventually social services. But if you could begin to deal with that issue of funding Medicaid adequately, you'll have at least one thing beyond technology, beyond utilization, beyond other things you can do that drive costs up. You could begin to contain costs. And I would encourage you to at least consider that, even though this is not the Ways and Means Committee. With that, Mr. Chair, I'll stop.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm happy to answer any question you have.
Not the Health Care Committee either, but I do recognize reimbursement is a huge issue, and there's also a discrepancy, I think, with that works against our primary care providers, which help hold costs down, too. But I've got like 1 minute before my committee administrator turns everything off. And I just wanted to mention, I appreciate your comments about the increased administration and all of that. But from my standpoint, one of the things that isn't addressed then is how do we as a government make sure that the rates are justified, and how do we provide that transparency and at the same time streamline your administrative costs? So I think that's part of the solution to this particular issue, and that's what I'd like to see worked on. Because I think it's still important to have that element of transparency and that element of the agency being able to justify the increases in the premiums and health care costs or the health insurance costs in this case to small business individuals and large business too. So I'm going to close with that, and I got the last word. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair.
I just wanted to, what am I supposed to do with this?
Note for the record that we've received written testimony.
Note for the record, I've received written testimony from the Bus Project and Oregonians for Health Security
in favor of
House Bill 3145. Thank you. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2432, 2433, and 3145, and adjourn the House Committee on Consumer Protection.
You heard a lot about competition. I'm glad.